Radio Prague News.
A proposal will be put to the government to extend the life of Paskov mine by 2 years. ANO has launched its European election campaign and admitted rifts in the party. And the Czech public deficit has fallen to 1.4% of GDP. Minister of Industry and Trade Jan Mládek has proposed that 1.1 billion crowns be earmarked to prolong the life of the Paskov coal mine for another 2 years until the end of 2016. Mining company OKD had threatened to close the mine at the end of the year with the loss of around 2,000 miners' jobs. Mladek said the proposal had been discussed with finance, social affairs and environment ministers and would be put to the government sometime in April for approval. He said he personally favoured the option where the government bought ownership of the mine for a symbolic 1 crown. The mine is in an unemployment black spot, with fears that the knock-on effects of closure would be much greater than the direct loss of jobs. Czech political party ANO launched its campaign for European Parliament elections on Tuesday. Former EU membership negotiator Pavel Telička is heading the ANO list of candidates. He said that some of the main themes of the campaign will be the completion of the internal market, promotion of Czech food products and protection of consumers, rational pumping of EU funds and promotion of exchanges for Czech students. Party leader Andrej Babiš said that 3 or 4 of the party's members in the lower house of the Czech Parliament had sought to stand for the European Parliament as well, but the party leadership stopped them from doing so. The Czech public finance deficit fell in 2013 to 1.44% of gross domestic product, from 4.2% in 2012, the Czech Statistics Office announced on Tuesday. That performance would put the country in line to join the Eurozone on the public deficit criterion for the first time since 2008. The government is counting on a public deficit below 3% this year as well. In separate figures, the office revised downwards its previous growth figure for the last quarter of 2013 to 1.2% year-on-year and 1.8% quarter-on-quarter. The Czech economy shrunk by 0.9% over the whole year. Minister of Finance Andrej Babiš has extended the list of state companies whose bank account surpluses could be used to help the state budget. Babiš told journalists that Czech Post, oil pipeline company Mero, fuel distribution company Chepro and the State Institute for Drug Control could all contribute to the state coffers. He's already said that almost 70% state-controlled power company ČEZ could pay out its total profits for 2013 in dividends, and he's also counting on around 4 billion crowns from the state forestry company. Former Finance Minister Miroslav Kalousek on Tuesday attacked Babiš for raiding the accounts of state firms, saying that funds should be left with them to develop them strategically. Czech pupils have come out well in a worldwide test of practical problem-solving abilities. Czechs shared joint 16 and 17 places with Germany in the ranking of 44 countries from the Organisation for Economic Cooperation and Development, which were involved in the tests. The first 7 places in the rankings went to 15 and 16-year-old pupils from Asian countries, with the best-placed Europeans, Finns and British in 10th and 11th positions. Czech Minister of Education Marcel Chládek said the test results were proof that schools were giving pupils a practical foundation for later life. And finally, the death toll on Czech roads rose to 115 during the first 3 months of the year, according to preliminary figures released by the police. That is 3 more than during the same period in 2013. Although there was a drop in accidents in January and February, with the total number of fatalities the lowest for 43 years, the total number of fatal accidents shot up in March. They numbered 50, 7 more than the total of March 2013. Police said that most of the accidents had their specific reasons, but speeding was a common factor in many of them. I'm Chris Johnston, and that was the news.
You're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech Radio. My name is Jan Richter. Coming up in today's show, Czech patients are still waiting to see the benefits of medical marijuana a year after it was allowed by law. Then, one of Europe's greatest writers, the Brno-born Milan Kundera, turns 85. And later, a Russian citizen's detention by the Czech authorities fuels a campaign for the reform of Interpol. All that coming your way, so please stay with us. When the law on medical marijuana came into force last February, it seemed the way was open for patients suffering from cancer, multiple sclerosis and other neurological diseases to use the drug under medical supervision without having to acquire it secretly in violation of the law. However, despite the good intentions of MPs who pushed through the legislation, little has changed in the past year and cannabis remains unavailable legally. Daniela Lazarova has the story.
The legislation approved at the beginning of last year allows patients with cancer, multiple sclerosis, chronic pain and other serious disorders to obtain a small amount of medical marijuana on an electronic prescription in whatever form best suits their purpose. This should be decided by their physician and only some specialists have the right to issue such prescriptions. The only fly in the ointment of this pioneering endeavour was the fact that initially the marijuana would have to be imported, thereby increasing its cost and would not be covered by health insurance. In the end, even those patients willing to fork out an estimated 300 crowns per gram of marijuana were unable to do so. Although three companies were given licenses to import medical cannabis in the course of last year, none of them moved to do so, and since it is unavailable, doctors are not prescribing it. Consequently, patients who rely on a small daily amount of marijuana to bring them relief are still having to break the law to obtain it, either by growing it themselves or buying it with no guarantee of quality on the black market. The cited reasons why the law has not been put into practice are many. The Health Ministry says that the process of introducing medical marijuana into the system is complicated, and it will take a while to get the wheels in motion. Patients who use marijuana confirm that doctors know little about its effects and are wary of prescribing it. Moreover, only a fraction of doctors use electronic prescriptions, which will only become compulsory in 2015, and the Health Ministry has no leverage to make those specialists who are entitled to prescribe marijuana to introduce electronic prescriptions before that time. Another argument is that it is costly and few patients can afford it on a regular basis. Consequently, the firms licensed to import it have not placed any orders to date. There is a chance that this vicious circle could be broken once the authorities start issuing licenses to Czech companies to grow cannabis plants for medical purposes, which the law will enable them to do as of this April. Among those who plan to apply for a license is the Pharmaceutical Faculty of Charles University in Hradec Králové. Its dean Tomáš Šimůnek explains.
Our faculty does not see this as a business venture. We have medical orientation and marijuana as a pharmaceutical product is in our area of interest. I assume that we will be growing a limited amount in the tens of kilograms annually, depending on demand. And we hope to make it more affordable for patients. If imported marijuana were to cost 300 crowns per gram, we could produce it for half that or less. We naturally want to cover our expenses, and any small profit we make would be used for students and research. But we certainly do not see this as a profit-making enterprise.
The first homegrown marijuana could be available in the late summer or early autumn of this year, but it will require much more for patients to see the benefits of this law in practice, predominantly active involvement of doctors and pharmacists.
Daniela Lazarová with that report. Tuesday sees the Czech-born author Milan Kundera, who has lived and worked in France since the mid-1970s, turn 85. Although Czech media has reported extensively on the occasion, it is no secret that the author of acclaimed novels like The Joke and Immortality has a complicated relationship to his homeland not allowing his later novels to be published in the Czech language. Jan Wellinger has more.
Critics like Jiří Peňaz from the Czech daily Lidové noviny have argued that Milan Kundera owes the Czech Republic nothing. If anything, on the occasion of the author's 85th birthday, it is Czechs who could offer him thanks. In an opinion piece published Tuesday, Peňaz reminded readers that Kundera's novels cast a positive light on Czechoslovakia, informing the West that the country was, culturally speaking, not a Russian governorate where locals blew their noses in the tablecloth. In his op-ed, Peňaz alluded to the weight of Kundera's absence, a question that has come up routinely since the Velvet Revolution. Why? Examples abound. When Mr. Kundera allegedly visits friends in the Czech Republic, it is incognito to avoid detection. When he was awarded state honors by the late President Václav Havel, he chose not to attend, and he has forbidden any of his new work to be translated into Czech. The Unbearable Lightness of Being was the last in 2006. A friend to Milan Kundera, publisher Miroslav Balaškík, sees no ill intent on the author's part, but on the contrary, consistency in his approach to his craft. The publisher spoke to Czech TV.
I think the reason Kundera does not allow his books to be published in Czech is twofold. Every translation is, to a degree, an interpretation, and I think if he saw a Czech translation, he couldn't just let it lie. He already works closely with translators into other languages, but his involvement in Czech would be undoubtedly greater. It's safe to say he doesn't have time for that. The other thing is that if he did publish in Czech, I think he's worried about the hullabaloo that would focus on his person rather than on his writing. As is well known, Kundera does not want to be physically known as the author, but to be present only in the text itself.
In that, the author has been steadfast, closely guarding his and his wife's privacy and refusing interviews for years. A rare occasion when he broke his silence was in 2008, and it was certainly not sought. It was alleged that the author, as a young man, had informed on a courier for Western intelligence in the Stalinist 1950s, for which the accused narrowly avoided the death penalty and spent 14 years in prison. Mr. Kundera vehemently denied any connection and was backed up by international authors and even by Mr. Havel, who never believed the story. Even so, the accusations markedly changed how the author had been viewed previously, to say the least. As for his place in Czech literature, well, for one thing, he has written in French since The Unbearable Lightness of Being. It is perhaps more precise to view him through a broader European tradition, which the author himself has always subscribed to and addressed in essays and criticism. Publisher Miroslav Balaškík once again.
Milan Kundera je podle mě jeden z takových posledních skutečně klasických spisovatelů.
For me, Milan Kundera is one of the few last great classical authors who consider writing to be more than a single novel or story, but a continual process. A process that includes essays and a reflection on literary tradition, what literature means, and where one fits as a writer. I think that is one of his contributions to both Czech and world literature.
Milana Kundery do českého a zejména tedy světového písemnictví.
Publisher Miroslav Balaštík ending that report by Jan Wellinger. Coming up next, in this week's edition of In Focus, we return to the case of Russian citizen Tatiana Paraskevich, who was detained for 22 months in the Czech Republic on what human rights organizations say are trumped-up accusations dreamed out by Kazakhstan's absolutist president. The good news is that the proceedings now appear to be nearing an end, and she has been released from custody. But the case has thrown up questions about the possible abuse of international police cooperation agency Interpol and the role of Czech authorities. Chris Johnstone has the story.
Tatiana Paraskevich at an emotional press conference in Prague last week as she thanked her family, Czech and Polish supporters. At times, the 40-year-old mother broke down in tears. She and sympathisers were marking the beginning of the end of an almost two-year-long judicial nightmare played out in the Czech Republic. That nightmare began when Paraskevich was detained in the Czech spa city of Karlovy Vary in May 2012. The breakthrough for the Russian citizen came with the news on March the 18th that Czech Minister of Justice Helena Valková had quashed a Ukrainian extradition request. 10 days later, a Czech court rejected a parallel extradition request from Russia. The Minister of Justice must make a final decision to block that extradition. Human rights organisations say both countries were being used by the dictatorial regime of Kazakh President Nursultan Nazarbayev. According to the extradition request, Mrs. Pereshkovits was suspected of being part of a large-scale criminal organisation which defrauded tens of billions of dollars. Amnesty International, the Open Dialogue Society and other human rights groups say the real reason was that Pereshkovits was a former colleague of Mukhtar Ablyazov, the former businessman who became the biggest political opponent of President Nazarbayev before being forced to flee the country in fear of his life. They say Pereshkovits was being sought by the Kazakh authorities to give evidence against the former opposition leader. As well as the extradition request, they also say threats were used against Pereshkovits's 81-year-old mother and son and daughter still living in Moscow. The human rights organisations say that Pereshkovits's case and many similar ones staged against past associates of Ablyazov are a sad reflection on the abuse of International Police Criminal Cooperation Organisation, Interpol. They say the 22 months spent by Pereshkovits in preventive custody at the repeated insistence of Czech prosecuting authorities, although there was a limited risk that she would flee the country where she is now seeking asylum, does not give a very flattering picture of the local judicial system either. The Warsaw office of the Open Dialogue Foundation was one of Mrs. Pereshkovits's most active and vociferous supporters. Political advisor Alexandra Gajewska says her cause follows the same format of many others directed by the Kazakh authorities using close links to Russia and former Ukrainian President Viktor Yanukovych.
We do observe that process, and in the European Union we have observed the cooperation of Ukraine, Russia and Kazakhstan. The requests that were sent after the oppositioners, after people co-working with them, we can put them into few boxes. They are accused of financial cases, the defraudations. They are accused of anti-government movements, and they are also accused of terrorism attacks. So we can see the cooperation between Russia, between Ukraine and Kazakhstan, and we can observe that in Italy in the case of Shalabayeva, we can observe that in France in the case of Ablyazov, the case of Tatiana Paraskevich here in Czech Republic, but also in Poland in the case of Murat Berketabayev, and Spain where Alexander Pavlov was arrested too.
A report by the Open Society Dialogue outlines how the former states of the Soviet Union have signed many conventions on criminal cooperation between them, and Kazakh secret services have what amounts to free rein to operate in Russia. It also cited an Amnesty International report on how special services in Russia, Ukraine and states in Central Asia cooperated to illegally abduct targets and smuggle them away to prison. But for the organisation which promotes Western European values based on democracy and respect for human rights, the biggest concern is how Kazakh authorities are indirectly able to manipulate Interpol to do their dirty work in European countries. In theory, Interpol's constitution prohibits it from taking any action in activities of a political, military, religious or racial character. Alexandra Gajewska again.
It is really, really worrying. We have written a report on the misuse of Interpol. It is really worrying for us that an institution that was supposed to be a good institution is now used to look for, to hunt for oppositioners, and it is used by Western countries to fight what they want to do. So we also went to OSCE, we also went to European Parliament, we have discussed the thing, we have presented the report, and I think that OSCE is really interested in that worrying misuse of Interpol, and Open Dialogue Foundation is really going to show more about how the Interpol is misused now.
One of its goals is that a public debate is launched in the European Union on reforms of Interpol's supervisory mechanisms so that countries which violate human rights and cannot guarantee fair trials are no longer in a position to take advantage of the system. With this in mind, Polish members of Parliament appear to be taking the lead. Tomasz Makowski is a member of the Polish lower house and has been one of the most active supporters of Tatiana Pereszkiewicz and was present at her press conference in Prague last week. He says that a hearing on reform of Interpol has been tabled for discussion in the Polish Parliament and that the question has also been raised within the Visegrad 4 Forum for cooperation between the four states of Central Europe, the Czech Republic, Slovakia, Poland and Hungary. Similar calls are coming from other organisations, such as the United Kingdom-based non-governmental organisation Fair Trials International. It has highlighted wider cases of abuse for the so-called red notices, or warrants for international arrest, and the fact that these notices have more than doubled to more than 8,000 in 2012, compared with the situation 4 years earlier. John Bock is a former Czechoslovak dissident who in 1994 co-founded the independent campaigning group for justice, Shalomon. He says that one of Interpol's flaws is that it does not take any independent steps to check the information it is given, but acts largely as an automatic processor of eviction requests.
Interpol don't work like a really classical police or investigation organization. They are like a service for other states without any kind of interesting in if the person done it or not. Because anyway, they are police. The system is built on the police rules and function.
Bock, an outspoken, sometimes lone, and often controversial figure in the field of human rights, points out that the fact that the pre-World War II Interpol was originally sited in Vienna and eventually came under the control of Nazis, with an organisational structure being used to threaten, find and harry enemies of the regime. Reinhard Heydrich, the so-called protector of Bohemia, was at one time president of Interpol after it was fully taken over by the Nazi regime and moved to Berlin. He adds that the Czech judicial system has been shown in a mixed light during the Pereszkiewicz episode, with the prosecution service adamant that she be kept in custody, although this was an exceptional step in these circumstances.
We think that really even 25 years after the changes, still there are some kind of mental and ideological relation between the people who are doing the justice here and those who are from the post-Soviet countries.
Tatiana Pereszkiewicz's Prague-based lawyer, Marina Machitkova, agreed that the insistence on custody for her client from the state prosecutor was an unusual feature of the case. We contacted Interpol for a reaction to the claims that it's being manipulated and abused for political purposes, but Interpol did not reply.
That edition of In Focus by Chris Johnstone was the final part of our program today. Just a reminder that all our programs are available online at radio.cz, and you can also follow Radio Prague on Facebook and on Twitter. If you have any comments or questions for us, you can easily get in touch. Contact us at email at english@radio.cz or by post to Radio Prague, Vinohradská 12, 12099, Prague 2, the Czech Republic. But for now, from me, Jan Richter, and all of us here at Radio Prague, thank you very much for joining us, and goodbye.